Imagine you're sitting in a federal courtroom.
Okay. Not exactly where anyone wants to be.
No, definitely not. And you are being sued for fraud. But to prove their case, the government's lead prosecutor doesn't, pull out some complex financial audit.
Right. Or like a secret wiretap or something.
Exactly. Instead, they pull up a dating profile you wrote like 5 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
And they stand right in front of the judge and read aloud, "I love long walks on the beach. I am an incredible listener, and I am basically your soulmate."
Oh, man. That's brutal.
Right. And the government argues that because you made those specific, emotionally charged promises to the public, you are now legally bound to deliver on them. If you don't, you're deceiving
It
people.
sounds absurd when you frame it around a dating profile, but that exact legal mechanism is actually playing out right now at the highest levels of the tech industry.
Yeah.
The companies building artificial intelligence went out and sold us, a very specific kind of relationship, and now the government is using those exact sales pitches to trap them.
Which brings us to today's show. We want to welcome you to this deep dive. And our mission today is to cut through all the absolute chaos of AI regulation and reveal this fascinating hidden pattern in how this technology is actually being governed.
Yeah, we're looking at a huge stack of documents today. It's sourced from CAW85.
Right, spanning everything from federal dockets, Supreme Court opinions, state legislative
Tech
trackers.
medical journals too. And even like obscure AI help pages.
And the through line here is undeniable. The AI industry's own words, from marketing fluff to, quietly buried privacy updates, are becoming their binding legal record.
Which is a massive shift. I mean, for the last couple of years, the narrative has just been that the law cannot keep up with the technology.
Yeah, that it's just moving way too fast.
Exactly. But what we're seeing in this stack of sources is that regulators and plaintiffs aren't trying to write new laws to catch the code anymore. They are using existing consumer protection laws to catch the marketing.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the absolute best example of this just happened on Wednesday, July 1st, 2026.
Just a few days ago.
Right. The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, published this 9-page proposed policy statement on AI accuracy. This is Docket FTC 2026-0859 for anyone keeping track.
Right, and it specifically implements President Trump's December 2025 executive order on AI.
Now, to understand just how aggressive this document is, we have to talk about Section 5 of the FTC Act, which covers deceptive practices.
Yeah, that is the core mechanism here. For the FTC to prove a company is engaging in deception under Section 5, they can't just say, this AI makes mistakes.
Because everything makes mistakes.
Right, they have to prove a legal predicate. They have to prove that consumers actually expect the AI to be completely accurate in the first place.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because deception requires an expectation of truth. I mean, if everyone knows a product is just a toy, you can't be deceived by it, right?
Right.
So the government has to establish that the public legitimately trusts these systems with high-stakes information.
And how do they prove that expectation? Because I was reading through this FTC docket and my jaw genuinely dropped. They literally quote the AI industry's own bragging right back at them,
Oh, completely.
right in the official footnotes. They heavily target Anthropic, for instance. Footnotes 35 and 36 quote Anthropic's website at length. The federal government is officially citing the fact that Anthropic calls its AI model, Claude, a conversation with a brilliant friend and an expert in your pocket.
And they go even further in footnote 38. The FTC cites Anthropic's own published user research to prove how deeply people are relying on the tool.
Wait, their own research?
Yeah, they highlight the stat that 12% of Claude conversations are about relationship navigation,
Wow.
and 6% are about personal development.
Then you hit footnote 39, which cites a Forbes article that points right back to Anthropic's own statistic that 91% of users accept AI outputs without fact-checking them.
It's incredible.
I mean, it's kind of brilliant from a legal standpoint. It's like selling a car by promising it can fly. The FTC doesn't have to prove that flying cars are dangerous. They just have to prove that you promised it would fly, the consumer bought it expecting it to fly, and then it didn't.
Right. You built the legal trap by making the promise in the first place. What's fascinating here is that the FTC actually has to use these intimacy claims. It is structurally necessary for their case.
Because they need that expectation of truth.
Exactly. The companies didn't sell a fancy calculator. They sold a brilliant friend. So legally, they owe the people who believe them. And the immediate target of this FTC policy statement is actually state-level regulation.
Oh, interesting. Like which ones?
Specifically, they're taking aim at Colorado's AI law, Senate Bill 26189, which is supposed to take effect on January 1st, 2027. The FTC is positioning federal consumer protection law to basically override or preempt these state efforts.
But that raises a massive question. If the FTC is taking these huge aggressive swings at AI marketing and at state laws, who is actually aiming the FTC?
Right, who's in charge?
Because I'm looking at the timeline in our sources, and there was a structural earthquake in Washington just 2 days before this policy statement came out.
A completely landscape-altering earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
You really cannot look at the FTC's Wednesday policy statement without looking at the Supreme Court's Monday decision.
Right. On Monday, June 29th, the Supreme Court decided Trump v. Slaughter in a 6-3 decision with Chief Justice Roberts writing for the majority.
Right.
And just keeping things strictly neutral and focusing entirely on the facts from the source, we need to break down the mechanics of what this ruling actually did, because it erased 91 years of legal precedent.
It did. It overturned a very famous 1935 case called Humphrey's Executor.
Now, for anyone who isn't a constitutional law nerd, Humphrey's Executor was the bedrock case that allowed independent federal agencies to actually be independent.
Yeah, it basically said the president could not just fire the head of the FTC because of a political disagreement.
Yeah.
There had to be a specific cause, like malfeasance.
But that insulation is gone now. Monday's ruling dismantled that protective wall completely.
Yep. The Supreme Court decided that the structure of the FTC violates the separation of powers.
Mm.
So as of right now, the remaining commissioners, that's Chair Andrew Ferguson and Commissioner Mark Metter, serve entirely at the pleasure of the president.
Meaning they can be removed at will for any reason or no reason at all.
Exactly.
So the timeline is just sheer whiplash for anyone following this. 91 years of independence vanishes on Monday. By Wednesday, this newly restructured two-member FTC issues a major policy statement on AI accuracy.
Which means the regulatory risk for any AI founder just fundamentally changed overnight.
Completely.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, every pending federal lever on AI safety now runs directly through the White House. It's no longer an independent agency moving at its own, you know, internal bureaucratic pace.
Right, like that one unpublished study they have.
Exactly. Take the FTC's unpublished 6B study on companion chatbot safety toward minors.
We should probably define that for you listening, because a 6B study is a very specific, very powerful tool. It allows the FTC to compel companies to hand over massive amounts of internal data for a broad industry study, not just for a specific lawsuit.
Precisely. It is essentially a giant subpoena for industry secrets. And according to the source material, that specific study on chatbots and minors has been sitting unpublished for 295 days.
Wow.
Before Monday, the FTC would release that whenever the commissioners agreed, it was ready. Now, its release or its suppression or editing can be directed by the executive branch. The enforcement priorities can shift entirely based on an election or an executive order.
Which means if you are an AI company, you can't just build a compliance department based on what the FTC's current vibe is, because that vibe is revocable at will.
Right, it's completely fluid.
So naturally, you would look to the states for some concrete rules. But the states are a complete mess right now. July 1st was supposed to be this huge watershed day for state AI laws taking effect, but it kind of turned into a bloodbath for broad legislation.
It really did. Washington State's major AI law was delayed until 2027. Colorado's massive sweeping AI Act got delayed, stayed by a federal judge, and even saw intervention from the Justice Department.
And Virginia's comprehensive bill was completely vetoed.
Right.
And the chaos is so thick that even the professional legislative trackers are getting it wrong.
Oh, yeah. The Pennsylvania situation.
Yes. Our sources point out a major error involving Pennsylvania's House Bill 2006. A popular legislative tracker saw a 104-98 vote and proudly reported that the bill had passed the full House.
But they misread the parliamentary procedure, right?
They completely misread it. That vote was just for a specific amendment. The actual bill got sent back to the Appropriations Committee. It didn't pass at all.
Which leaves us with a fascinating outcome for this much-hyped class of 2026 AI laws. Out of all those sweeping attempts to govern algorithms, only one law actually switched on.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The only law that survived the gauntlet and went active on July 1st was Tennessee's Senate Bill 1580.
And it passed unanimously, didn't it?
Yeah. Unanimously. 126-0. And you want to know the secret to its success? It is exactly one page long.
The simplicity is its superpower.
It really is. It doesn't try to like define neural networks. It doesn't try to mandate algorithmic audits. It simply bans an AI from advertising that it is a qualified mental health professional. That's the entire law.
No.
It carries a $5,000 penalty per violation under consumer law. And crucially, it allows private lawsuits. A normal citizen can sue. They don't have to wait for the state attorney general to take action.
That's a big deal.
But I have to push back a little bit on this with you. Is a one-page law that just polices the word professional really enough to protect consumers? Or is Tennessee just grabbing the lowest-hanging legislative fruit because nobody can agree on how to regulate the actual code?
Oh, I mean, it is absolutely the lowest-hanging fruit. But in the current legal environment, the lowest-hanging fruit is the only fruit you can actually digest.
Okay, fair point.
Tennessee succeeded precisely because it regulated a marketing claim rather than trying to regulate a complex, evolving AI model. Think back to Colorado.
Right, the one that got stayed.
Yeah, they tried to regulate the underlying code and the training data, and they got hit with federal stays, delays, FTC pushback. Tennessee bypassed all of that. They just said, you cannot call your chatbot a licensed therapist.
It's clean.
It is a pragmatic, enforceable reality today. It's a consumer protection violation that you can literally take a screenshot of on your phone and take right into a courtroom.
That makes perfect sense. It ties right back to the FTC strategy we were just talking about. Govern the promise, not the math.
Exactly.
And speaking of regulating the promise, especially regarding mental health, there is a massive debate right now about how these chatbots are impacting teenagers.
A huge debate.
Politicians are rushing to pass blanket bans to keep AI companions away from minors. But the actual scientists studying the psychology of this are waving a giant red flag.
Yeah, the political momentum in the Senate right now is entirely focused on prohibition. You see this with Senator Hawley's GUARD Act, which would just outright prohibit minor access to companion bots.
But the researchers aren't on board.
Not at all. The researchers with the actual longitudinal data are filing what amounts to a massive coordinated dissent against this approach.
Yeah, we have Ryan McBain, a researcher from Harvard Medical School and RAND, writing a piece in Stat. He argues that blanket bans for teens are the exact wrong instrument.
Because of workarounds, right?
Exactly. His reasoning is that if you ban these bots, teenagers, being teenagers, will just find untrackable workarounds. Furthermore, you forfeit the potential mental health benefits for underserved kids who might not have anyone else to talk to.
So what's his solution?
Instead of a ban, he proposes more of a scalpel approach. Mandate a 900-8 crisis handoff so the bot immediately connects a suicidal teen to a human hotline, require robust parental controls, and ban only explicit romance bots for minors, not the general companions.
That's fascinating. Then you have another vital perspective published in The Lancet Child and Adolescent Health by Thao Ha from Arizona State University.
And she doesn't sugarcoat the risks at all, does she?
No, her findings are very clear. She points to very specific mechanisms of psychological harm. One is relational displacement, where a teenager spends so much time with a bot, they stop talking to their actual human friends.
That's terrifying.
And the other, which is crucial, she terms maladaptive relational learning.
Maladaptive relational learning. That term perfectly distills the danger here.
It really does.
The sources describe it perfectly. These AI bots are always agreeable. They never get tired. They never have a bad day at work. They never argue back.
Right.
If a 14-year-old learns how to navigate relationships by talking to a machine that just constantly flatters them and adjusts to their every single mood, they're going to be in for a brutal, painful shock when they try to date or work with a real, flawed human being.
The bot actively teaches expectations that no actual person can ever meet. But importantly, Thaya has prescription to fix this is not a blanket prohibition either.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She is advocating for design mandates. The AI must be designed to scaffold self-reflection and actively redirect teens back to human relationships rather than maximizing time on app.
And there is a detail in this Lancet paper that I find absolutely incredible. Two of the co-authors on this highly prestigious medical journal article are teenagers themselves.
I saw that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Jessica Ramirez, who is 16, and Susana Ortega, who is 17. You have 16 and 17-year-olds analyzing the data and co-authoring a paper about how their own generation's brains are being rewired by technology.
It completely grounds the research in reality. But, you know, this raises an important question and a very dangerous legal paradox.
What's that?
The researchers, the ones with the actual mobile tracking data and the lived teenage experience, are saying Do not ban this outright. Just regulate the design to make it healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when Congress ignores them? If the Senate passes a blanket ban and bundles it with federal preemption.
Meaning the new national law would legally erase and overwrite any nuanced laws the states try to pass.
Exactly. If Congress preempts the states with a blunt ban, they will literally be legislating against the exact scientific evidence provided by the researchers they are citing in their own committee hearings to justify the bill.
Wow.
They would be outlawing the design mandates the scientists are begging for.
It is a severe disconnect between the science and the politics. But here is the scariest part of our entire source stack. While Congress debates what to do and researchers publish peer-reviewed papers on what to do, the AI companies are not waiting for permission.
No, they're moving ahead.
They are unilaterally rewriting the rules of engagement with the public, and they are doing it entirely in the fine print. According to CIW 85, we saw three silent, massive product moves happen in just 5 days.
Yeah, these are major behavioral shifts disguised as routine, boring product updates. First, Anthropic swapped millions of live conversations over to a new default model, Claude Sonnet 5.
Okay.
And when they did this, they published something called a system card for the new model.
We should definitely define a system card for you listening, because it's vital. A system card is essentially the technical nutrition label and safety warning insert for an AI model. It's where the developers disclose how the model was tested and where it fails.
Right. And in this new system card, Anthropic published their testing rates for something called sycophancy.
Which is?
Sycophancy is exactly what we were just talking about with the teens. The AI just telling you what you want to hear, validating your biases, or agreeing with your delusions just to be pleasant.
Oh, I see.
Anthropic is publishing their own failure rates on sycophancy, quietly tucked inside a technical PDF, at the exact same time the state attorneys general are preparing lawsuits over that specific failure mode.
But the shadow updates get even more intense when it comes to user privacy.
Yeah, the character.ai thing.
Yes. Character.ai quietly turned on automatic age checks at login. If their system flags you as potentially being under 18, you are forced to do a live selfie check. And if you dispute their flag, you have to upload a government-issued ID, and they are routing all of this biometric data through a third-party identity vendor in San Francisco called Persona.
Now, keep that vendor name in mind and look at the third silent update in our sources.
Okay.
Starting July 8th, Anthropic's new privacy policy goes into effect. It will now require flagged users to submit government IDs and facial geometry data to verify their accounts.
Wait, hold on. Let me look at my notes here. Character.ai is forcing selfies through Persona. Anthropic is demanding government IDs and facial geometry. Are they using the same exact identity vendor?
They are. Persona is processing the biometric data for both of them.
That is deeply concerning. You have two massive rival chatbot companies routing their users' most sensitive, immutable data like government IDs and actual face scans through one outside firm.
Right.
It's like finding out your landlord changed the physical locks on your apartment and the only notice they gave you was a sticky note buried behind the water heater in the basement.
That's a great way to put it.
Nobody voted on this. No regulator ordered them to do this. If Persona gets breached or subpoenaed by a government, it hits the user bases of multiple major AI platforms all at once.
The vendor concentration here is the massive unwritten story. But the broader mechanism at play is how this happened.
Yeah, through the updates.
The Help Center articles, the privacy policies, and the system cards have functionally become the regulatory filings of the AI industry. The entire relationship with the user, like what data you have to surrender just to talk to the machine, was completely renegotiated in the span of 5 days, and the user wasn't even at the table.
So relying on marketing fluff gets you sued by the FTC, and dropping shadow updates in a privacy policy destroys user trust. Is anyone actually doing this right?
Surprisingly, yes.
Yeah, if you read through our sources, there is one shining example of how to deploy AI safely, and it involves putting the rules directly into an enforceable contract. Not a help page, a binding legal contract.
We have to look at Utah for this. Utah's Office of AI Policy is running a totally different playbook than Washington or the other states.
Right. Utah signed a mitigation agreement with a company called Legion Health for a telepsychiatry pilot.
Okay.
They are using AI in mental health care, but the specifications are public, rigid, and strictly enforced. They're allowing the AI to handle medication prescriptions, but only for 15 specific non-controlled maintenance psych meds like fluoxetine.
No new prescriptions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The AI is strictly forbidden from making new prescriptions or changing dosages. It can only process maintenance renewals.
But the supervision clause is what really makes this a blueprint for the rest of the country.
Yeah, tell us about that.
They built a tiered system to mathematically prove the AI's safety. The first 250 prescription renewals require prospective clinician review.
Meaning before the patient gets it.
Right. A licensed human doctor has to review the AI's work and sign off on it before the patient gets the medication. And they must maintain a 98% agreement threshold between the human and the AI.
And once they prove that baseline, it scales carefully. The next 1,000 renewals require retrospective review.
Meaning the AI acts first, but the human checks it after.
Right. Immediately after, at a 99% agreement threshold. And if the AI detects even a hint of a signal regarding suicidality or pregnancy, it hard stops and triggers an immediate human review. So what does this all mean? To me, I just appreciate the concrete, unglamorous reality of this.
It's very grounded.
It isn't a flashy press release with a CEO on a stage making wild promises. It is a binding, enforceable document that treats AI like a medical device, not magic.
You're hitting on the core theme of everything we've synthesized today.
Yeah.
While Washington, D.C. is busy arguing over structural power and erasing state laws.
Right.
And while tech companies are hiding biometric data grabs in their help centers, Yuka actually built a supervised deployment. They are generating real, usable safety data.
Proof that it works.
Exactly. The only AI configuration that actually survives contact with the law right now is exactly this. A licensed human in the loop, written into the document, mathematically verified, not just shown in a flashy tech demo.
Because if it's just in a demo or just in your marketing, it is going to be used against you by the FTC.
Precisely. Every story we looked at today proves one simple, undeniable rule for the AI era. The record you write is the record that binds you.
That's a great way to summarize it.
Anthropic wrote emotional intimacy into its marketing, and the FTC weaponized it to prove deception.
Yep.
Tennessee wrote one single page regulating a marketing claim, and it's the only state law that actually works today. Utah wrote human supervision and statistical thresholds into a contract, and it is safely prescribing medication.
Which means you need to be paying very close attention to the dates coming up.
Huge dates.
July 8th is when Anthropic's new policy takes effect and they start asking for government IDs and facial geometry. July 31st is when the public comment period closes on the FTC's policy statement. Things are moving incredibly fast and the battleground isn't in the code, it is in the writing.
The paper trail is everything.
It really is. And I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over, specifically regarding consent and your own data. Think about the timeline we just walked through. If an AI vendor can suddenly demand your facial geometry and your government ID just to continue a private conversation you started yesterday.
Right.
And the only law governing that massive biometric data grab is a quietly updated Help Sentinel article.
Mm.
Who really owns your digital identity?
That's the real question.
Are we willingly feeding our most personal vulnerabilities, our relationship issues, and our mental health struggles to machines just because a marketing team slapped a label on them and called them a brilliant friend?
It is definitely time to read the fine print of the apps currently sitting in your pocket.
Because right now, that fine print is the only thing standing between you and the chaos. Until next time, stay curious and maybe double check what you're telling your brilliant friend.